This podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. Tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain? MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back in the game. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just enter promo code MENACE to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code MENACE to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. It is Tuesday, December 17th, 2019. Got about a week till Christmas Eve. So hopefully you're getting your Christmas shopping done. I actually have not started. So there's that. we have a great episode for you today. Anna Hickey will be on the show, our Clemson correspondent. So we will get the inside the Tiger Cage access. A look inside the Clemson program, how the Clemson fan base is feeling about this semifinal matchup, and really, really excited to get her thoughts. I think you guys will really appreciate the insight and the intel. So it's going to be a great episode. Also, want to talk a little bit about signing day coming up. We're going to have a good signing day recap episode on Friday. And so really excited to talk about that. I want to talk about signing day, kind of what's going on right now leading up to signing day for coaches and in the industry. And then also on Friday, we'll recap signing day, kind of how everyone finished, how it went. And so really excited for this episode. And next week, we will be really breaking down the two playoff matchups. There are two episodes next week. I know Christmas is there, so we'll do one episode, probably the 23rd, one the 26th, 27th. To preview those two games and really break them down and analyze them. I've been watching a lot of film on these four teams, and I don't want to neglect the other bowl games, so we will do an episode talking about those other bowl games too. But anyways, let's get to the show.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage, and the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
ass. All right, welcome. Episode 57, Menace to Sports. As always, thank you for joining us. Apologize that these shows are getting a little kind of inconsistently released, but we're working on this new format. It's going to be twice a week. Thinking either Monday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Thursday. Unfortunately, this week, as I mentioned last episode, I'm a little busy on Thursday. Got a big court date for that time I was such a criminal and went to pick up my kids. And for those that don't remember, it's because my ex-wife decided for 2 weeks not to give me my kids. Like, completely defied court orders. And so finally, I'd had enough. I hadn't seen my kids in 2 weeks, so I talked to my attorney and he said, I have every right to pick him up from school. So I went to the school to pick him up. And the school, come to find out, there's been a little collusion between the principal and my ex-wife. I think there's maybe some wine nights. I don't know what goes on. But anyways, really excited for Thursday. It's time to clear my name, get an acquittal, and just let the lies and all that nonsense begin to unravel. So that's what I'll be doing Thursday. So I apologize. There will not be an episode on Thursday, but there will be on Friday. So fired up for that. Also, thank you for tuning in. But before we get to Anna Hickey, I want to talk about signing day. Like what happens on signing day? And here's what people, I think, need to understand, especially with this new signing day, this early signing day, which has been around for a couple of years now. It's very different. It's really the signing day. There will be a handful of kids. I would say that 99% of big time programs recruits will sign. Now you'll have some lower level recruits that don't sign because they're trying to either find a home, or those smaller schools maybe are trying to see where the chips fall. And but as far as big time recruits, 99% are going to sign on signing day this week. And for coaches, it's like that's the finish line. I mean, you go all season grinding. I mean, we talked about the So You Want to Be a Coach episode. I think it's 110 or 120 hour weeks, work weeks. The minute it's over, you're flying state to state to city to city. I remember one time I was in, I think, 8 states in 5 days, from Arizona, California, Colorado, Georgia, Florida. I think I went to Tennessee, Virginia. I mean, I was all over the place. And so you do that for like 2.5 weeks straight. I guess it's been 2 weeks. You do that for 2 straight weeks. And then when you get home on the weekend, you have a recruiting weekend. So you're spending all day, all night, Friday night, all day, Saturday, all day, Sunday with these recruits. And then you're right back on a plane to do it again. So signing day is like the moment where all your hard work pays off and you're done. Now, you're never really done, but you're done traveling. They're going to get a couple days with their families for sure. There will be a big signing day party. Every staff does it. And it's, but it is the aha moment where you're like, finally, I can take a deep breath and relax. Excited for all the coaches in the industry that get to do that after signing day. Like I said, I think we're going to bring in a guest or two to talk signing day, talk about it. And really detail signing day, detail the classes, detail where everyone's at, and take a look at the national landscape of recruiting. Other news, and we're going to talk about it a little bit with Anna here shortly, but big news for the Buckeyes, Jeff Hafley, the new head coach of the Boston College Eagles. And for those that don't know, this is what's really funny. He is the secondary coach and obviously co-DC at Ohio State. The co-OC and wide receiver coach from Clemson is a guy named Jeff Scott, who just was named the head coach at South Florida. So these two units will be battling each other in the semifinal, and both of their coaches are going to be kind of absentee coaches. Like here and there, they're going to be doing two jobs. So it's just funny that the two position groups are matched up against each other. But what that means nowadays, and I wanted to talk about this because I experienced this in several times, but most vividly in 2008, in a similar situation as you're watching Ohio State and Clemson go through. Dan Mullen was the offensive coordinator. He took the Mississippi State job, and we were playing for the national championship against Oklahoma. Well, he had to do two jobs because he took the job. He needed to recruit, but then he also was going to be the OC for the national championship game. I mean, how do you not? He had Tim Tebow, a Heisman Trophy winner. And so the funny thing is back then the support staff was literally two people. It was two GAs on offense and then two on defense, so 4 total. So there's two people that could pick up the slack, and I'll never forget it because I know Tim Tebow actually has said it many times back in the day. It's kind of old news now, but Tim and I together sat down in a staff room for about 6 hours, and we did the entire third down and red zone game plan for the national championship game versus Oklahoma. And it was implemented, and we rolled with it. And talk about that, my first trial by fire. I'm helping game plan for the biggest game imaginable as a whatever I was, a 24-year-old kid. But it was a really fun experience. But when these things happen, these guys, and it's a blessing. Like, I know Ohio State's going to hire Kerry Combs, I heard. I think that's not a done deal, but that's pretty much done, which will be great. He's one of the finest corner coaches I've ever been around, and he'll be a great asset, bringing some NFL knowledge that he gained in the Titans. And but here's what happens. Before, in that transition period, you really need to look at your support staff, because your support staff is who can, I guess, smooth over the transition and make sure that everything goes smoothly, everything still happens. And when Jeff Hafley returns, or when Jeff Scott returns, there will be work had been done, right? There's not going to be a drop off in performance. And the guy that you would say, for instance, like on offense, I know Corey Dennis left to go to Colorado State. It's Urban's son-in-law, so he's not there anymore. And then you have a guy like Louis Adazio used to be a support staff member, was at Bowling Green. He went to Colorado State. Now you're talking about the key on offense is a guy named Keenan Bailey. And defense has a Matt Thurin is a great football coach, support staff member. He's a guy that they will need to rely on. I'm not sure who Clemson's guy is on offense, but the cool thing is Dabo Swinney is a receiver coach by trade. So Jeff Scott being away just means Dabo gets to play. He gets to enjoy and have fun with the receiver. So it's really cool that these guys get those opportunities. I know Jeff Scott really well. I don't know Jeff Hafley that well. I think I've met him once, but it's really good they get those opportunities. And I'm hopeful that they both have success, obviously, but it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I want to get to this interview with Anna Hickey. I think it's the most valuable thing that's going to be on this episode. So we're going to take a quick break from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be right back with Anna Hickey.
Support for Menace to Sports comes from Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. I have to ask, have you ever groomed your pride and joy? I will tell you this, after our tailgate this past weekend, I had countless numbers of our listeners, subscribers, that flat told me, they were like, man, that Manscaped stuff, everything that you talked about, I ordered it, and it was a difference maker. And that's what we want from this show. So I would encourage you to check it out, because Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 2.0. Inside the Perfect Package, you'll find their electric trimmer called the Lawnmower 2.0. This waterproof and skin-safe technology will protect you from nicking your sack. You can also create less mess by trimming in the shower. And of course, let's not forget about the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? The Perfect Package 2.0 also includes anti-chafing performance boxer briefs that keep your package cool and smelling fresh all day. For on-the-go freshness, you'll love the Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. It's time to get clean with this Perfect Package 2.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code MENACE at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code MENACE at manscaped.com. For our listeners only, special exclusive offer, that's 20% off with the free shipping at manscaped.com. Make sure you use the code MENACE. All right, we are live in studio on Menace to Sports with our, I guess I coined this term. I gave you this title, Anna. It's our Clemson correspondent, our insider, our own personal insider, Anna Hickey, who is a Clemson 247 Sports reporter, I guess, right?
Yeah, I say reporter. I mean, I cover recruiting and teams, so reporter covers it.
Well, that is what it is, and really excited to have you back on. I know people really enjoyed our last conversation on this show, and so I, obviously with the matchup and the magnitude of the matchup, it was like God just, you know, blessed us. It was like, oh man, I know who I'm getting on. So really excited to talk to you a little bit just to get a Clemson perspective, because as we talked about before, people are delusional regionally on all fronts. And so really excited to talk to you a little bit about Clemson, where they're at, and how they feel, how you feel about this matchup, because everything's on the line. This is it.
Yeah, I'm excited for this game. It feels like I really haven't been able to dive a ton into it yet, just because I've been my world has totally been recruiting this past week. And then before that, it was Jeff Scott to USF. So I'm looking forward to Wednesday just to kind of close the book on recruiting and really devote all my time to looking at this game, because there's just so many fun matchups to look at. Like, I just feel like these teams they kind of mirror each other in a lot of ways. But then I do think it's fun to kind of dissect some of the matchups where one team might have the edge over the other, and just so many playmakers on both sides of the ball, such good coaching. So no, I think it's going to be fun lead up.
Well, I've said it for about probably 5 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, that in my opinion, these are the two best teams in the country. And it's reminiscent for me of the 2014 year when we played Alabama in the first round and then went on to play Oregon. And it was not even a question what game was quote unquote the actual national championship game. And it's very similar this year to me, because when I watch the film on these four teams and in the rest of the country, really, I think these are the two best teams in the country, Clemson and Ohio State. And I'm really curious. I mean, obviously Dabo has had success against Ohio State, painfully for me. And, and the cool thing is people have started to switch opinions, and that's what most people will say. In my opinion, it's they have come back to reality that this Clemson team is the real deal. Like, they're really good, and people wanted to act like they weren't for a while, but people are now kind of coming back like, oh no, they're really good. And so my question really is, what is the feeling in Clemson, South Carolina right now?
I think from a team perspective, true or not, I think a lot of it has been exaggerated by Dabo. The whole, you know, no one thinks we're any good. Our players aren't getting recognition. Our team isn't getting recognition. The playoff committee, I guess he didn't say committee, but he said something like pretty vague, insinuating that they wanted to leave Clemson out, find a way to keep Georgia in, that whole thing. So I think that some of that's exaggerated, but at the end of the day, I mean, it doesn't really matter what we think. If his team is totally bought into that and they're entering this playoff with a chip on their shoulder and they're thinking that it's kind of them against the world, because that's worked for them in the past. And I think if it's not broke, don't fix it. And Dabo's just going to kind of keep clinging to that. What I think is interesting, though, is that they're not the only team coming into this game with a chip on their shoulder, because Ohio State, I mean, you know, 31-0. I know a lot of none of these players were on that team, but still, I mean, they know that happened. And then also they probably are feeling gypped that LSU got the number one spot, not necessarily because they have to play Clemson, but because they felt like they probably deserved it. Especially because they had the number one spot the week prior. So I think both of these teams are going to come out feeling like they have something ready to prove. And it's not just Clemson.
No, I agree. And I think this is the game of the year, and I don't care what happens in the
fight. So you don't think LSU has you don't see them being the best team in the country?
No, absolutely not.
Is it just because of their defense?
Yeah, just because of their defense. I mean, their offense is the best offense in the country. I don't think anyone could debate otherwise. I mean, their offensive line is a little suspect, but
I think you could debate otherwise on the offense. I think Clemson might have a case for best offense in the country if you get a little bit better play from their offensive line than what we've seen in recent weeks. But I don't know. Joe Burrow, I just feel like this LSU team, maybe they're not the best, most complete team, but I don't think there's any way you can say that they won't beat Clemson or Ohio State in the national championship.
No, they're dangerous. They're dangerous is what they are. They're dangerous. And the reality is Clemson might have the best offense in the country. They might. And people will point to the fact that they haven't been tested, and not that that is a end all be all. It doesn't, if you're the best offense in the country and you never play anyone that can challenge you, it doesn't mean you're not. But what Joe Burrow's done this year, through the gauntlet that he's faced, and don't get me wrong, I'm the first to tell you that it's not the gauntlet that the national media will want you to believe it is, but it still was a gauntlet. It still wasn't easy. I mean, some of the past defenses he faced were top 25 in the country. I mean, I think he faced four or five top 25 past defenses in the country, and he had his way with them, and their offensive line certainly hasn't played well. But Joe Burrow kind of is the eraser. He makes up for it. I mean, in pass pro breakdowns, he finds a way to get out of the pocket, make a play. And I will say, I released, I guess it's, I haven't heard anyone else do it, but it was an all CFP team, all pre-playoff team. I took the four teams, evaluated every position, and kind of said who, in my opinion, on film evaluation, who was the best tackle in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. And what's funny is it was almost I would say 70% Ohio State Clemson. It really was. And
wow, okay. Did you put a quarterback?
I had to put Joe Burrow. Had to.
Okay.
Not that I don't think Trevor Lawrence makes a case or Justin Fields. I mean, I think reality is it's the four best quarterbacks in college football. That's what's cool. And so you're debating between the four best. It's not like there's an easy discard. I mean, to say that Jalen Hurts doesn't have an argument, he certainly does. They all do. But I had to put Joe Burrow just because of the numbers and obviously the Heisman Trophy winner. But not that I think that provides any validity to any type of evaluation. Yeah. But tell me this. How does the Clemson camp view this matchup with Ohio State? And I know the history with Ohio State, the two bowl games we faced Dabo and Clemson, and they were loaded like they are this year. But though this is a different staff, different program, different team, how do the people in Clemson, South Carolina view this matchup right now?
I think they're pretty confident. And I don't know, I think that stemmed from this offense clicking on all cylinders right now. No one has been able to slow them down in recent weeks. And then I just think the trust that they have in Brent Venables to come up with a plan. I think too, I don't know how much people are actually watching film of both teams. Because if you are, in my opinion, I don't think how you come into this matchup saying, oh, this team for sure is going to win, or this team is for sure going to win, or Clemson's going to win by X amount of points, or Ohio State's going to win by X amount of points. I mean, maybe that happens, but I don't see how you can enter that matchup with that in mind, just because every time you look at one advantage one team might have, you can combat that with another advantage that the other team might have. So that's what I think this makes this so interesting, is it's going to come down to what matchup really matters. And maybe what team makes the most mistakes, least mistakes, turnovers, that sort of thing. Any Clemson fan thinking that you're going to see another 31-0 outcome or something like that, I think they're fooling themselves. And that any Ohio State fans that are thinking, okay, and Clemson hasn't played anybody this year, and we're going to kind of bring that to light, I think they're fooling themselves. So I really don't. If you're looking, asking me for an outcome, I don't know where I'm going to go with that yet. But good thing we have plenty of time to kind of figure that out before I have to make a prediction.
Oh, plenty of time. Plenty of time to overanalyze everything. Everything will be analyzed ad nauseum, yeah. And it won't disappoint. That's for sure. But I guess the real thing that I'm excited to see is, and people, I know this, Ohio State fans don't know enough about him, but I'm interested to watch I don't think there's any debate. The two best defensive players in college football are going to play on the same field on December, whatever, 28th. I mean, Isaiah Simmons and Chase Young are the two best defensive players that I've seen on film. And it's not really close. Talk to me about the talk about Ohio State's defense and Chase Young. And also, I guess, give some perspective on Isaiah Simmons and who he is and how dominant he's been, because he's kind of a hybrid. It's like his stats aren't always the most dominant and flamboyant, but I've watched the film. He's ridiculous. And I don't think people realize that.
You know, I think people realize that. But I don't think that they realize maybe just how many spots Venables lines him up in. Just because he's a linebacker and dropping into coverage, or just because he's a linebacker and blitzing, I mean, he'll still line up as a deep safety sometimes. So it's not just the fact that he can run support and play cover, just how many places they can line him up, where it's pretty similar. I mean, in some aspects, it's similar to Chase Young. I mean, they don't play the same position, obviously, but Ohio State, they're not just lining him up, you know, on the side, putting a hand down. They're lining him up at linebacker sometimes and doing all sorts of things with him. So it's just both of their versatility, and you just always have to know where they are on the field. They're just with two incredible defensive players. And I know the first part of this question was Chase Young, or was, you know, Ohio State's defense. And I've been watching them a little bit, and what sticks out to me, and you can answer this, is just how they've stuck to their scheme. I mean, are they always going to play a single high? Is that what they're going to do against Clemson?
Yeah, they're very, very committed. I mean, they're committed to it. And for Clemson fans, it's bizarre. I get it. It's like, it's like a very strict identity, and they believe in what they do, and they do it really well. And it's total opposite of Brent Venables. Obviously, there's several ways to skin a cat, and both work obviously a very high level. You're talking about probably the two best defenses in college football. But yeah, that's what they do. And they'll throw a wrinkle every now and then, mostly in alignment and scheme up front, not necessarily in coverage as much. But it's definitely they are committed to what they do.
Yeah, there's not a lot of weaknesses on the Ohio State defense at all. I think maybe, I mean, the Clemson just has a ton of playmakers. And then when you account for Trevor Lawrence and how he's been using his legs recently, that's just another dynamic that I think Ohio State's going to have to account for. So, and I know they haven't faced playmakers like Clemson this season. I mean, I think you could look across the board and say Lawrence is the best passer they faced. Etienne is the best running back they faced. Clemson's perimeter skills, the best they faced. I mean, and honestly, have they faced a running quarterback that is more effective than Lawrence?
They certainly have not faced a team with the you know, weapons that Clemson has. They have not.
Yeah. I think, go ahead.
No, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, how they defend it. I think it really is. The cool thing is like you said, people are going to debate this and talk about it for whatever the next 3 weeks or 2 weeks. But the reality is neither team has faced a team even close to as loaded as Ohio State or Clemson. And so it's, there's a lot to wonder. There's a lot to see, because Ohio State has certainly not faced an animal like Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne. I mean, you talk about T. Higgins, Justin Ross, across the board. They haven't faced anyone even close, nor has Clemson. So it's going to be cool. It's going to be fun to watch play out live.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm interested to see how Ohio State kind of prepares for that two-headed monster of Clemson, because they haven't faced a ton of balanced attacks. I mean, I guess Michigan, I know they had some success in the first half through the air, but you know, they haven't faced an offense that not only the talent that Clemson has, but just the two-headed monster where you have to, you know, do you play the run? Do you play the pass? I mean, kind of pick your poison type of deal. So to me, that's going to be interesting, because I think there's some success to be had from Clemson's point of view, maybe with the linebackers for Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Where do you see that as a matchup advantage?
It just depends on how it all plays out. Ohio State does a good
job. Passing game.
Yeah, Ohio State does a good job protecting their linebackers. I mean, with the one high zone coverage stuff they do, it's a lot more zone oriented, space oriented. They can definitely find matchups, but you're going to have to do it with a tight end or running back. Now, Travis Etienne provides that matchup right. issue, and I detailed it last episode, but in my opinion, Travis Etienne is the Doak Walker Award winner. I don't really give a shit who won it or who was up for it. He's the best running back I saw in film this year, and people don't give him the credit because of the lack of stats, which is nonsense in my opinion, but he's the key here in my opinion. I mean, they haven't faced a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence. They haven't faced a receiver like T. Higgins, but I feel like they'll have a plan for those two in the throw game. The reality is, how do they stop Travis Etienne? How? That to me is on defense for Ohio State, the matchup to watch.
Yeah, I think that is too, but I also think that it's not a given that Etienne is just going to run all over Ohio State, because against South Carolina and even Virginia, those fronts held their own against Clemson's front. So I think Clemson's offensive line, they're going to be challenged a little bit behind the scenes leading into this matchup to kind of man up a little bit and kind of assert their will, because Clemson was able to get away with it in pass game and against Virginia and South Carolina because the passing attack was just on fire. So it didn't really matter. But against Ohio State, Clemson's not going to win this game if they can't get Etienne going, in my opinion. And then it'll also be interesting to see if Clemson utilizes a lot of 10 personnel just to kind of create more matchup advantages. And then, but then if you take off a tight end, you're going to have one less person to protect. And then you got to worry about Chase Young. So there's just so many what ifs.
So many variables. And I will say that, I mean, two of my favorite tackles that I watched are Clemson's both tackles, one of which is an Ohio boy, Jackson Carman, but especially in pass pro, they're not the toughest in the run game, but in pass pro, they've been pretty good. And
yeah, they've been good. Yeah.
That's
going to be awesome. I don't know how often those two will be lined up against each other, Young and Carman, but that is, and it's going to be interesting to see how, if they think Carman can handle him.
Yeah.
I mean, no one has really been able to handle him. Right. I mean, you have to double team sometimes, I guess, but I don't know. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch, and especially because he's an Ohio kid. So Ohio State fans will be hoping that it goes the Buckeyes' way for sure. Yeah. So switching topics a little bit, because both teams have a predominant coordinator that has taken a head coaching job. Jeff Hafley just took the Boston College job for Ohio State. Jeff Scott, who we talked about on the previous episode, just took the South Florida job as the head man in Tampa, which I think is a phenomenal hire, especially considering the location and how I know him as a coach and a person. But talk to me about the departure of Jeff Scott, how that'll impact their offense. I know Tony Elliott kind of calls the offense with Jeff, but just talk to me about the dynamics. Talk to me about how that came about and what the feeling is on Jeff leaving and how that will affect the game plan, affect how they operate, what's the impact there?
Yeah, I think I don't want to say a long time coming, but no one was surprised when this happened.
No one.
Clemson's been able to kind of keep, they've obviously had such solid staff continuity and kind of unprecedented in this era of college football, but this was just the right fit, and I don't think anyone really questioned that. There's, you know, solid backing down there in terms of AD support. Jeff Scott knows the area. I think he thinks he can win there, he can recruit there. It just seemed like the right fit for a lot of reasons. But from like a game standpoint against Ohio State, I don't really think it's going to affect it that much, because like you said, Tony Elliott's the primary play caller. So it's not like Clemson hasn't had an offensive coordinator in town all this time. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure Jeff rejoins the team, I want to say on Wednesday, Thursday. And then he'll be with Clemson here on out. So yeah, he hasn't been in Clemson this past week, but Dabo's already had the plan in place because he knew this was going to happen at some point to promote offensive analyst Tyler Grisham to wide receivers coach. So Grisham, who's been working, who played for Clemson, played for Sweeney, and then has been back, I think, for 6 years now. He's kind of taken the reins. So, and has been working with the wide receivers. So I don't really think they'll miss a beat from that perspective, especially too because Dabo, his background is in wide receivers. So,
so
that's where he spends most of his time in practice anyways.
Well, the reality is, I mean, like you just said, I mean, the head coach, Dabo Sweeney, is a receiver guy. No different than Urban Meyer. So like if I had to go on the road recruiting, Urban could just step in and coach my position as well as any receiver coach in the country. And that's what Dabo has been able to do. I just think it's so crazy that legitimately you're talking about two new head coaches at big time programs, and it's the secondary coach and the receiver coach. Like their players are going to go against each other, and both of their coaches have not really been around, and they're leaving. It's just,
Exactly. When does Halfley get back?
I think he'll probably get back around the same time. I think both of them are going to kind of see out signing day. I mean, obviously Halfley got hired later. So, but after signing day, there's no greater recruiting tool than being in the playoffs as a head coach of some other team. I mean, we saw it in Ohio State with Tom Herman as he was the head coach at Houston, but saw through the playoffs because sure enough, we won the national championship and he threw on that Houston hat. And that was the best recruiting that could have ever happened for him and his new program. So that's definitely obviously happening for both of them. But
yeah, I would be surprised if it affects either team just because it's not like it's an awkward situation. Like maybe sometimes in Alabama in the past, or it's like, all right, I can't believe this guy's leaving, or kind of it's awkward timing. I think maybe Halfley was a more of a surprise that he got this job, but no one's faulting him for leaving it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so absolutely.
I just feel like everyone around both programs are super happy for their guys. And let's be honest, both of these schools' support staffs are humongous. So it's not like they're going to be really affected from a game planning point of view.
Very different than in 2008 when I went through it as a GA, and it was literally like, all right, we lost a full-time coach. There's only seven of us, so we need to pick up the slack. Nowadays, there's 50, so it's like it's not a huge manpower loss for sure.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see. So you already said you won't give me a game prediction, but I need a game prediction. Give me anything. Just throw it out there.
I'll give you what I think could be some key matchups. Nothing too groundbreaking that I don't think people haven't already touched on, but to me, if you're Clemson, you're most worried about the run game. And I'm not just saying J.K. Dobbins. I'm saying the run game because of what Fields can do as well. Mm-hmm. And just watching some of their games recently, Penn State specifically, you know, you would see the read option and their backers and safeties would get caught flat footed because they'd be waiting to see if the mesh point is Fields going to keep it or give it. And then by the time they realize what's happening, Fields or Dobbins are already up the field and you're chasing them from behind. And for the way Dobbins can get outside the edge, I just don't know if Clemson's going to be able to contain the edge against him, especially against Ohio State's tackles. And if Mumford's healthy, I know he's been having some back issues, but you know, that's just going to be, I mean, I don't know. Because if you can't stop the run, if you're Clemson, then it's going to be an uphill battle, big time. That'll be key, I think. And the other thing that impressed me about Fields was that I hadn't really watched much of him this season. But as a runner, I guess I thought he was more of just a fluid guy in space that can make you miss. But no, he can get some dirty yards. Like he can get you three or four yards. It's second and six. And then you hand off to Dobbins, he gets four more yards in your third and two or one. And then, you're going to get that first down. So just how efficient they are in the run game, I think is huge because you don't have to necessarily ask Fields to kind of put the team on his back from a passing standpoint. I'm not saying he's limited as a passer necessarily, but you don't ask him to make all of these reads and decisions. And I think if Clemson's not putting Fields in third and five, third and six, third and seven, third and long situations, it's going to be a long night. Because if he is in those situations, though, I think Venables will be able to disguise some stuff coverage-wise, maybe bring some unique blitzes that will maybe give him some trouble that he hasn't had all year. But if Dobbins and Fields in that run game is going, it's going to be a long night, I think, for Clemson on the defensive side of the ball. And then I think Clemson offensively, I think it's going to surprise some people maybe how well they're able to move the ball against Ohio State. I know Okuda, Arnett, Wade are terrific corners, but they haven't seen anything like Higgins and Ross. So I think, especially I think in Michigan, I was watching that game. Collins had a little bit of success, 6'4 guy going up in the air against Okuda. I don't know how much he actually moved the ball, but there was a couple of times where maybe holding or PI could have been called. So I think with Lawrence's ability to throw those balls up to those receivers, those 50-50 balls, I think you can see Higgins and Ross maybe make some plays. And then to me, what I will give you a prediction is taking the over. Ooh, that's the only thing I'm confident on. What is it, like 62.5, 63.5 right now?
So you're taking the over. That's the only prediction you're giving me.
I'm taking the over, like, unless maybe, like I said, I have preserved the right to change my mind. There's a lot of time left, but
no. You're held to the fire right now.
I'm just surprised that I think we'll both defenses will have trouble stopping these offenses. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just after watching Ohio State and kind of obviously haven't been watching Clemson all season. That's just my initial impression right now.
Well, that works. I think the good thing is this is the hardest game all year to call, and it'll be harder to call this game than the national championship, in my opinion, regardless of which teams make it out. This is the game. I've called it for 6 weeks. This is the two best teams in the country, and they're playing each other, you know, in a couple of weeks. And I don't know how anyone could give an accurate prediction outside of what you just did or what I've talked about, but, I'm excited for it, and I know you are too. I know everyone is. But the last question I'll throw out there, and not necessarily person for person or recruit specific, but just in my experience, having been in the industry for 15 years and going through, you know, these successes and making playoffs and things like that, and how impactful that is with signing day coming up this week. How has this success on the field and another playoff berth for Clemson parlayed into success on the recruiting trail, and how do you see their class finishing up just in a general perspective?
Yeah, I think the 2018 class was really the class where it was like, okay, Clemson is now recruiting on a national level. They're going head to head with not only like Georgia and Florida State, but now they're going head to head with Alabama, Ohio State, and they're plucking kids out of Texas and even be having success in California. And I think, you know, Ohio State's always had success nationally, and so has Alabama under Nick Saban and Notre Dame and schools like that. But I think Clemson definitely has not had that. I know they experienced success as a team nationally with the national championships that came before the national recruiting, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. It
does. So I don't know if that all, I think that's pretty unique because people now just view Clemson as such a national power that maybe they've assumed that Clemson, that brand has carried weight in other places outside the Southeast for a while. And it's really not the case. It's really just kind of come on more in recent years. But Clemson's, their recruiting strategy is still going to stay the same. I mean, they're still not always going to take big classes. They're still going to focus on a smaller pool of players relative to most schools, and then really just key in on those guys and hope it pays off in the end. Cause that's worked for them before. They invest a lot of time and energy into lesser guys, but they feel really confident in those evaluations. And they've had a pretty good track record in that sort of strategy.
A really good track record.
Yeah.
I mean, so really good.
But in this class, I think, they're number one right now in the country in both overall ranking and then rating per commitment, which I think is more, I look at that more than, you know, the overall rating just because of how sizes vary. You know, you could have one team signing 28 and the other signing 20.
Yeah. The number of kids you bring in doesn't matter. It's how good are the kids you brought in. I'm with you.
Right. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So They are number one in rating per commitment right now. I think edging out Georgia, I think, is number two. But so much can change, and obviously going into these next 2 days and then again in February. But I think right now Clemson is positioned to have a chance to finish number one for the first time ever for 24/7 rankings. So that would be that'd be exciting for Clemson fans. And Dabo Swinney, I mean, I think he'd rather it not be that way. He's kind of prided himself always.
Oh, he loves
it. Oh, yeah, we've never had the number one recruiting
class. Oh, yeah, he loves it. Little old Clemson, he loves it. He loves playing the underdog. But,
yeah, and it kind of plays into his thing, like, yeah, we get our guys, we identify who we want, and we could care less about stars. So right. I don't know, Dabo, if you're going to be able to say that again this cycle.
Well, it'd be scary to see what Clemson could be with quote unquote better players. I mean, it's like, gosh, like how much better could they be?
They're bringing in their D-line class is just, and if they get Birch, and don't even ask me where that kid is going because I don't know. But if they get, I mean, even without him, their D-line haul is just pretty incredible. Solid offensive line haul, really solid offensive line haul, especially for Clemson, who, you know, they're not like Georgia where they're going to land five stars with ease. That's just not a position that they've recruited the elite guys that consistently. So for their standards, definitely a really good class. And then obviously DJ Uiagalelei, the quarterback, bringing in a five-star linebacker, Trenton Simpson, that they just landed. So across really good DBs too. So across the board, just a really, really strong class. And regardless if how they kind of close out, but do think they'll land at least one guy on Wednesday, and then maybe Birch, and then another one I think they could possibly close out with in February.
Well, that'd be a heck of a haul for Dabo, and I'm interested to see if he can keep playing that all shucks underdog role if they start bringing in the number one class in the country.
Yeah, I mean, like I think his quotes are so entertaining that like a lot of times I'll tweet them out. And I'm like, if I'm not a Clemson fan or if I'm a fan of another team or even a media member following me, I'm like, am I muting this girl just because it's like Dabo? It's like it's again and again and again. And it's kind of like we get it. But I don't know. As long as he's saying it, I think like it's a huge storyline because his team kind of takes on persona. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's just been fun to follow. And I can't we haven't even gotten to like the media day portions out in Arizona, and we're just going to hear it again and again and again.
Oh, you will never not, but gotta love him. He's not Mike Leach.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not knocking it. I'm just, you know, it's obviously worked. It's just from a media perspective, like if you think you're hearing it a lot, like from a fan or from an outsider, like we hear it all of the time. And we're kind of like, he's talking to the media and we are the media, you know, the local media, but a lot of times he's just using us as a messenger to get it out to the talking head type.
Yeah,
you know?
you're his avenue to right, to play his narrative to the world.
Sometimes I'm like, do you realize that we're the media too? But yeah,
right. For sure. Well, it's going to be exciting, and I'm excited to watch it, and we definitely need to get you back on maybe after the game, after we see what happens, just to talk about it all.
Or maybe even before. I mean, I feel like there's a lot more to discuss, and
yeah, I mean, shoot.
I don't know. I mean, you could talk about these matchups all day, and you still could be going around in circles, I feel like, these two teams.
The reality is neither team has faced a team like they're about to face, and we don't know. Nobody knows. Shoot, the own teams don't know. It's just prepare them as well as you can and then roll it out there and see what we got.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Tell everyone where they can find you on social media to get all this Clemson insider info. And please don't hold any Buckeye hate against me personally. But where can they find you on social media?
I'm at AnnaH247. And wouldn't hold it against you if you don't start following me until after Wednesday or Thursday, because these next couple of days will just be recruiting stuff. But then I'll turn all my focus to this game. And I'm from Raleigh, so I'll get back to Raleigh, spend a couple of days with the family this weekend, and then I fly out to Phoenix on Monday. So I'll be there all week for coverage, and I'm really excited about that.
Well, there you go. Well, you have to give us some perspective from out there then. So definitely go follow Anna and wait till Friday if you don't want the recruiting tweets. But on Friday, hit her up on Twitter and follow her and get all the Clemson perspective. So you get both sides, not a one-side narrative, right?
Yeah.
For sure. Well, thank you for coming on, Anna. I really appreciate it and look forward to having you back on as always.
Yeah. Thanks, Zach. You have a good one.
All right, cool. All right. Well, we appreciate Anna coming on as always. A great interview, really great insight and great knowledge. So thank you to Anna Hickey for coming on. Make sure you follow her on social media to get all of your Clemson updates. And then we're excited about two things. I forgot in the beginning of the show, we're going to do a bowl pool, and it's going to be a bunch of merchandise and stuff like that as prizes. It's free to enter. It's going to be for subscribers only. So if you're not already a Patreon subscriber, go subscribe now at patreon.com/ Menace to Society podcast. Go ahead and subscribe. We're going to put the spreadsheet and link out tomorrow on Wednesday so that you can fill out a bowl pool, a bracket. Every subscriber can fill one out. And I'm still trying to figure out what that first place prize is going to be. But it's going to be something that you're going to be like, holy shit, I want that. That's all I can guarantee. I don't know if it's going to be something like extremely valuable. I have all this merch, all this stuff that I'm looking to give away. So we'll make it a little sweepstakes, a little, you fill out a bracket, you could win something cool. So that's what we're going to do. So if you're not a subscriber, subscribe on Patreon. If you are a subscriber, number one, thank you. Number two, look for that tomorrow. It will be out. And great episode. Really, really appreciate Anna coming on. And excited about our Friday episode. Make sure you tune in. We're going to have a little recruiting signing day recap. It's going to be a recruiting episode. And then starting next week, we're going to really dive into the playoffs and dive into these bowl matchups and talk about what I think is going to happen, what I see, what I've saw on film all year. So thank you for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you were entertained. Hope you learned something. And if not, if you didn't enjoy it, if you don't like me, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.